Okay, gentlemen. Okay, I'll just, before I begin the sicha, I just want to mention that the learning today in the yeshiva is dedicated in the memory of the Akiva ben Netanel v'Gittel Bolag, Philip Bolag, the father of one of our alumni, Jonathan Bolag. Bolags have Mr. Bolag himself was a before he passed away was a regular visitor to the yeshiva, both when Jonathan was in the yeshiva 11 years ago, as well as in subsequent years. He made a mark upon the yeshiva. The entranceway to the yeshiva is dedicated in his memory as well. Today, Yud Gimel Kislev is his yortzeit, and the neshama should have an aliyah. In this week's parsha, the Torah speaks of an incident. It's really, it's in Chamishi of the parsha, and it's an incident which is one of the more difficult incidents of Sefer Bereshit, and perhaps in the Torah as a whole. The rape of Dinah by Shechem, and then the first the negotiations of in order to free her of Yaakov and his primarily his children with the town of Shechem, and the subsequent agreement that the entire city will circumcise themselves, and then once that is done, on the third day of Yom Kovavim, the Torah says, when they were in pain, they weren't able to defend themselves, Shimon and Levi go and sack the town, murder the inhabitants, loot the city, and free Dinah. And the question, which I'm not going to get into right now, as to whether or not this action on the part of Shimon and Levi was justified, is something which resonates throughout the generations, and the Mefarshim have discussions about it. Those of you who are interested, the most basic text on that question is the Perush of the Ramban in this week's Parsha. And the Ramban first brings the Rambam's opinion on the issue, and then explains why he disagrees with the Rambam. I'm not even going to tell you who says what, but whether that action was a justified action. I want to focus, though, not on, if you will, on the question on an objective level. What is acceptable, and do we tolerate vigilante justice at any time? But rather on the subjective question of the relationship between Shimon and Levi on the one hand and Yaakov on the other. How does he view this action on the part of his sons? And the Torah here leaves us a little bit in the air. Yaakov, at the end of the incident, so he chastises his sons very strongly. Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon ve'el Levi, achartem oti. Yaakov says to Shimon and Levi, you have achartem. Very strong word. What does achartem mean? Any? All right. You have sullied me. All right. You've made me dirty. Lahavisheni biyoshev haaretz, to shame me in the, and not only to shame. Lahavish has a boash is the term used for a skunk in Hebrew. The bet aleph shin, I mean literally that you have made me stink in front of the yoshev haaretz, in front of the inhabitants of the land, the Knani, the Prizi. In other words, we might say it's a Chilul Hashem, but the Chilul Hashem isn't in the just the way that it's bandied about in a, you know, in a casual way. It's the most rank type of shame imaginable. Va'ani mitei mispar. But then Yaakov doesn't say the doesn't give a moral argument. He says, we are few in number. V'nesvu alai v'hikuni v'nishmati ani uveti. And the inhabitants will gather and they will basically annihilate us. Me, if he doesn't speak of us, he speaks of me. Everything is in the singular. I and my household. He doesn't want to even include Shimon and Levi into the conversation. It's me and my household. It's not us. It's not we. That what you have done. But Yaakov's seeming castigation is pointed at the pragmatic. He doesn't say Lahavisheni, after all, we stand for a different moral standard. How can you do such a thing? But rather, because now we've in effect declared war against the Knani and the Prizi, and we are, after all, a small tribe that's trying to scratch out its existence in this land. And Shimon and Levi respond. Vayomru. And they respond with four words. Hachizona ya'aset achotem. Will you allow our sister to be turned into, and I'll use the terminology that most of the translations use, but you can understand that it has a stronger resonance. A harlot? Will you allow our sister to be turned into that? And that's it. End of discussion. There is no no further response on the part of Yaakov. Yaakov moves from Shechem, and the Torah tells us that God protected Yaakov when he left Shechem. A few years later, and it's really just we don't know exactly how many years, but it's less than a decade later, Yosef will be sold from Shechem, from Dothan, right near Shechem. He will go to Shechem. His brothers will have taken the sheep from Hebron, have gone to Shechem. It's a significant distance, about 100 kilometers or so. And they feel comfortable enough to be shepherding their flocks in Shechem. There isn't any indication that maybe it's because the rest of the inhabitants don't really care about what happened to Shechem, or perhaps because they have significant deterrence. People are afraid of them. But for whatever the reason, Yaakov's fears do not come to fruition. Life goes on. And the Torah doesn't come back to it. Yaakov doesn't come back to it. Yaakov doesn't retort to that. And you have the sense that this particular discussion, and you ask yourself, who won the discussion? Who was right? And you read it, and you could easily get the impression from this that Yaakov is willing to concede the point to Shimon and Levi. Why doesn't Yaakov argue with them? So it could be because Yaakov feels there's nothing to be gained by arguing with them. By the way, there's a huge discrepancy in terms of the age between Yaakov and his sons. How old is Yaakov here in this particular story? Roughly? About somewhere between 100 and 105. And Shimon and Levi are approximately your age. Okay, maybe even a little bit younger in this action. Okay? They are, and by the way, this is all based on pshat of the psukim. I'm not going to get into it right now, but if you do the math, based on what the Torah tells us, the age of Yaakov when he goes to Egypt, and the age of Yosef, and all of these things, you can calculate what the age is. there's a huge discrepancy. And frequently, even when you don't have the discrepancy, right, and you haven't had this discussion with your children yet, you will, Be'ezrat Hashem, have the discussion, not over, I hope, anything nearly as traumatic as Shimon and Levi, but you'll have your discussion with your teenage children. But right now, you're on the other side, and you've had the discussion with your parents as the teenage children, and you realize sometimes that, point made, I understand your point, you understand my point, and we're not going to convince each other of our points. Shimon and Levi are people of principle. Yaakov, at the age of 100, or it could be Yaakov, it doesn't matter, at the age of 50, looks at things from a different pragmatic perspective. The Torah seems to say that, at least in the actual, the outcome, Yaakov might be wrong. And Shimon and Levi, they might be correct. Except that this is not the final word. The final word happens about 50 years later. 50 years later, give or take, Shimon and Levi are standing at Yaakov's deathbed. And the Torah hasn't, as I said, hasn't revisited this issue in those 45, 50 years. And now at the time of the brachot, when Yaakov blesses his children, he gives Shimon and Levi anything but a bracha. And he says, Shimon v'Levi achim, klei chamas mecherotehem. Shimon and Levi, your brothers. And your tools are tools of violence. Bisodam al tavo nafshi. In their secret, I had nothing to do with. Bikalam, and in their gathering, al techad kvodi. Do not include my honor. Ki va'apam hargu ish uvritzonam ikru shor. Because with their anger, they killed people and they looted. Arur apam ki az. Their anger should be cursed. Ve'evratam ki kashata. Yaakov waits till the last minute, literally, the last minute, in order to get the last word. And in that last word, Yaakov attacks them, not on a pragmatic level. There is no pragmatic concern. There's no pragmatic concern for Yaakov at this point. They're in Egypt. He's on his deathbed. The only question now is the actual principle. And here he comes out very strongly. Now the question that I have to ask, and that we have to ask, is why didn't Yaakov say it sooner? Why does he wait for 45 years to render this judgment? Why didn't he say it at the time? And if he didn't say it at the time, why didn't he say it later? Why doesn't the Torah record it later? And it's a radically different approach than what Yaakov said earlier. And here the Midrash, and it's one of the shortest Midrashim that I know, and it's one of those powerful Midrashim that I know. Midrash Rabbah on the Pasuk of Yaakov and his blessing, Shimon v'Levi Achim. So there is a four-word Midrash. And the Midrash says the following. Achim, brothers. So now we're down to three words. Lidina v'lo liYosef. Your brothers for Dina, you weren't brothers for Yosef. End of Midrash. What's the Midrash trying to say? Midrash is trying to say the following. Yosef was sold by his brothers, as we all know. Yosef was threatened first with murder by at the hands of his brothers. Who were the brothers who wanted to kill Yosef? So we can rule out some of the usual suspects. We know that it's not Yehuda, because Yehuda is the one who suggests that they sell Yosef. We know it's not Reuven, because Reuven is the person who tries to save them. Presumably, it's not the younger brothers, because they don't have the weight to render judgment. They're the followers, they're not the leaders. So that leaves two brothers, Shimon and Levi. They're the ones who are lobbying not even to sell Yosef, but to kill Yosef. Now Yaakov doesn't know any of this. We know it. But Yaakov doesn't know it. Perhaps Yaakov, when he hears the story later, or if whatever part of the story he hears or figures out on his own, he recognizes this. But Yaakov now says the following to Shimon and Levi. You know what? All of these years, over the course of time, it was an open question. We had this argument back then. I said, Achartem oti, and you said, Hachzonai ya'aset achotena. I said pragmatism, you said principle. And you know what? I didn't know who was right. Maybe you were right. God showed that you were right. But the moment that you were achim le'dina v'lo li'yosef, the moment that you were willing to murder your brother, so then you prove that your principle for Dina wasn't any principle at all. The principle that you had for Dina perhaps was true. Maybe there was a justification. But that's not who you were. You were just hot-headed vigilantes. You were just people who you could say, Arur apam ki az. Your anger is something which is cursed. Because when it came down to dealing with another sibling, so then you let your anger rule. You didn't think of your principle at the time at all. You didn't know who you really are. And that condemnation at the end, that's the final word. The final word is that Shimon and Levi are people who are Arur Apam Ki Az Ve'evratam Ki Kashata. You can say HaChizona Ya'aseh Achoteinu all you want. You can say that I'm working on principle. But if at the heart of things you're a person who is a hothead, at the heart of things you're a person who is a vigilante, if at the heart of things you're a person who lets his emotions rule him, so then Arur Apam. That's something to be cursed. That's something to be attacked. That's something to be vilified. That's what Yaakov is telling. Now, Rabotai, we are, as people, we are complicated individuals. Each one of us has our emotions. Each one of us has our thinking. We would all like to think of ourselves as people who act based on principle. What these stories tell us is that we have to be honest with ourselves. We have to be true and be thinking about who we are and what we are. There's a famous study that was done in Princeton University in 1973 by two psychologists, Darley and Batson. Can look it up if you want. And the study became known as the Good Samaritan study. What they did was the following. They dealt with, I don't remember the exact number, something around 60, 65 divinity students at Princeton University. People who were, I guess, we are in our own way divinity students. So this is why it's something to think about. And these students were given an assignment to prepare a lecture on different topics. And some of the people were given the topic of the Good Samaritan. Now, it doesn't come from, from Tanakh. It comes from the New Testament, but perhaps you're familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan. For the story of the Good Samaritan is the person who there is a person on the roadside in deep need of assistance, and he's passed over, literally, almost trampled, by different people along the route, including the people who are the prushim, the people who are supposed to show rabbinic Judaism. And the one person who stops for them is the person who is what we would call a kuti in the halachic lingo. Person who's a Shomroni, the Samaritan, someone who isn't exactly Jewish, who's on the fringe of the society, he's the one who stops for that person. That's the story. And the question, the test of this particular study was, they wanted to see, well, would the divinity students, how would they act when faced with a similar dilemma, a person on the side, on the road, that they needed to help? Would they act? So they told them, okay, here, this is the assignment. Each one of you, you can put yourselves in the place. You have to prepare a Dvar Torah, right? Prepare a sermon on different topics. Some of the people were given the Good Samaritan to speak about, some people were given other topics. And now, you have to get to where you're giving this was in another hall on the other side of the campus. And they had an actor on the side of the, right, on the path, who was a person clearly in need of assistance. And they wanted to see, would people stop for them? And would it matter what was the topic that they had chosen or they had been given to give the sermon on? And they found that here was what was the variable that made the difference? Anyone want to guess what the variable was that made the difference as to whether or not people stopped or didn't stop? Remember, these are divinity students, right? So these are people who are concerned with the welfare of other people. These are people who are consider themselves spiritual people. Right. What was the one factor that had a radical change as to whether or not people stopped or not?
Race.
What?
Race.
Nope. Wasn't gender. Race. What?
Gender.
Nope. They were all, this is 1973, they're all white men. Okay. No. What? So the factor that made, it didn't matter what they were preparing. People had this idea in mind. Right? They have a drasha in mind about the Good Samaritan. And here it is. I could be the Good Samaritan. They didn't stop, or they did stop, but the exact same, it didn't matter what they were talking about. Right? Approximately it was about 40% people stopped. What did make a difference, a huge difference, was how hurried they were to get to their lecture. In other words, if they were told, you were giving your lecture in 5 minutes, only 10% of the people stopped. In a situation where it was a low-hurry situation, to use the language of the study, 63% of the people stopped. Now, if you would ask any one of them, presumably, whatever they were talking about, whether they should stop, they shouldn't stop, what their principles were. So their principles were, of course, to stop and help a person who's on the side of the road who is in clear need of assistance. But what actually made the difference was how much of a rush was I in to get to a certain place. We fool ourselves all the time, Rabotai. We think that we are governed by principle. And we read the story of Shimon and Levi, and we say, you know what, I would never act in that way if I think that it's morally reprehensible. Or if I think that it is something that needed to be done, I would think it through, and I would make the judgment, and I would decide based on clear, cold analysis that this is something that needs to be done. Even though it's morally problematic, in this circumstance, it's something that needs to be done. But Rabotai, Shimon and Levi fooled themselves. Achim l'dina v'lo li'Yosef. When put to the test, they failed. And I would say that most of us would fail too. Because most of us would be governed by whether, well, what happens if I'm 5 minutes late to that important meeting? And it doesn't even have to be that important to me. How important are our principles to us? Now, this doesn't mean, of course, I should stress, I hope, that we're only governed by the circumstances, that we don't have the ability to let our principles govern who we are and what we do. Not only because 10% stop no matter what, so we could all be part of that 10%, but because it's a question of taking a step back and thinking and trying to, in any given circumstance, ask myself, what should I do right now? What really is important? Not to let the circumstances govern me, but to let me govern the circumstances. Michael spoke about it this morning. The difference to being Yaakov and being Yisrael is whether you are following the circumstances, judging yourself based on what is around you, or whether you are Esar ki sarita Elokim vanashim vatuchal. You conquer, you rule yourself first and foremost. And it starts with being honest with yourself. It starts with thinking things through. Not only right now while you're in the lab, as it were, but out there on the street in the real world. To take a step back and to ask yourself, who am I? Am I really a person of principle? Or am I a person who lets my emotions, lets circumstances govern me? Hopefully, we'll all take a step back and we'll all be part of those people, part of that group that really lets our principles govern who we are.